This is getting to be really amazing. The new nooks and crannies that we're now seeing tossed out in the mainstream media, the avalanche of information, some good, some bad, some you do with it what you want. As colleges deal with coronavirus concerns, Dr. Tony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that's not the NIH. Some people get that confused. It's the NIAID, warned parents this week to keep their children who contract coronavirus at school and not let them come home. It's the worst thing you could do, said Fauci. Said that Wednesday on the Today Show. Okay. There's a lot more. Trump's new virus king, King Scott Atlas, is using made-up statistics and false claims to praise the White House's pandemic response catastrophe. Well, that's what he was hired to do. I guess he's doing his job. A very interesting little video, The Astounding Physics of N95 Masks, worth a look. Let's see what else we got here. Key coronavirus forecast says, Henry will like this, he already knows, I'm sure, over 410,000 U.S. deaths by December 31st, January 1st. Governor Cuomo announces the fourth straight week with the New York coronavirus infection rate down below 1%. It's one of those statistics again. What do you do with it? Who made it up? Where did it come from? How was it composed? Who'd they sample? Was there oversampling? Trump maintains that the U.S. is rounding the corner on coronavirus. I don't know what corner he's seeing, but nobody says anything about the flu season except us. Carnage, this is a good story. Carnage in a lab dish shows how coronavirus may be damaging hearts. Has to do with the striated heart muscle being broken into smaller pieces by the virus. That's a very interesting story. Okay, now this one is also very provocative. Coronavirus death rates dropped as doctors stopped the use of ventilators. They cut back on the use of ventilators, and they're saying the death rate dropped. It wasn't growing anymore. Okay. Two-thirds of Americans will refuse any coronavirus vaccine right away. They want nothing to do with it. Hold on. Fauci also says there's a legitimate way to end coronavirus vaccine trials early. There's another. Like I say, it's very provocative, all of it. Henry, welcome back. Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, our colleague and the man right on the hotspot. Welcome back. Hotspot of reality.
Right. Well, it's good to be back, Jeff. And, I'll touch on a bunch of the stories that you actually cited. They all kind of come together to show a more complete story on exactly what's going on. And it looks like things are actually starting to crank up. Just a clarification on Tony Fauci. NIAID is actually within the NIH, so it's not
a subsidiary or a component of it.
Correct. NIH is National Institutes of Health, and there's a bunch of subgroups. His is on infectious diseases.
Yes,
allergy and infectious disease.
My point was they're crediting him with being the head of NIH, and he's not. He's NIAID.
Right. He's always been head of NIAID. And the head of NIH a little while ago, as you had mentioned, a couple of days ago, who got the Nobel Prize, Harold Varmus, actually was head of NIH several years ago. And
I want to commend you, Henry, please, for a moment. You really could have, and maybe should have, gotten a Nobel Prize. And the way you handled that and presented it was extremely professional and graceful. And I was impressed. Thank you for that. And you're really remarkable in your field.
They couldn't give me the Nobel Prize, because if I got the Nobel Prize, that would have brought the number to 3 Nobel Prize winners, all from my high school.
that would have been
too many for one high school. So
that is a bit much.
The other two were a couple of years in front of me. So all went to Niles East in Skokie, Illinois. So anyway. Getting back to the coronavirus here and some of these issues. Tony Fauci said the kids should stay in school, and the numbers are starting to show why that's the case, and it's just the very tip of what appears to be a very large and growing iceberg, which are the number of infections that are going to happen at college campuses. And that's going to create a major problem, regardless of whether it's at the college or at the homes when they go home. I strongly suspect that public health-wise, they should probably stay in school, but I also suspect that more and more will be coming home and kind of fan out and spread the virus. This weekend we'll also do that the holidays tend to have people travel more and get together more and think that, maybe this is over. And a lot of people are kind of thinking that way just because Trump wants to make it sound like it's over. And testing has gone down, so there's not as much testing. As far as New York's concerned, that's actually what the CDC encourages states to do. That's to do enough testing so that your frequency of positive falls below 5% at a minimum. And 1% is really what they'd like to see, that if only 1% of those that are tested are positive, that means you're getting a good percentage of the total number of cases. And that's essentially what you have to do to have any hope of keeping things under control by contact tracing. If you have a higher number where you're getting 7, 8, 9, 10%, that means you're not testing enough. And even if you're doing contact tracing, you're only getting a small percentage of what's out there. And therefore, you might be able to control it somewhat, but since you're not testing enough, there's way too many people that are infected that you're not testing. You don't know they're infected, and therefore you're not doing any contact tracing. And if you find out they're infected, further down the road, then by the time you do contact tracing, it's kind of late. Their contacts have already infected their contacts, and the virus is already kind of moved out. It's hard to get under control. Just to give you an idea, several schools have now reported big numbers of confirmed cases on the campus. It includes University of South Carolina, University of Alabama, Temple, and James Madison. I'm suspecting that there might be some issues here in Pittsburgh at the University of Pittsburgh. I mentioned previously that Pennsylvania basically has some of these local maps, that county maps that really divide things up into fairly small areas. And they do that for Allegheny County, which is where Pittsburgh is. And today they had a pretty big jump. There were over 200 new cases in Allegheny County. And one of the areas that jumped the most, I think there were about 12 new cases, was in central Oakland. And Oakland is where the University of Pittsburgh is. Actually, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and Carnegie Mellon and some smaller universities are all in Oakland and pretty much in central Oakland. And so I think that that's just the beginning of probably from students coming back to school and moving into the dorms and then getting tested and finding positives. Exactly how the universities are handling this is a little bit unclear as far as reporting is concerned, because what they're supposed to do is if they get positives, they're supposed to report it to the local health department. But I don't know what types of time delays are involved there between them getting a positive and I don't know if there's any confirmation or whatever, and then notifying the Department of Health and then moving that further down the road. I mean, the way it usually works, but I'm not sure how they're going to handle, you know, big numbers of college students, for instance. But normally the positives are reported to the municipality that the person lives in. And so for college students, I don't know if they're going to do it for, Allegheny County, because they're on campus and in dorms in Allegheny County, or whether they're going to divide it up and essentially take each student that's positive and find out what their permanent residence is and then report it to that state. So if they do that, at a minimum, that's probably going to lead to a delay and these numbers actually showing up in this state report. And it's also going to probably diffuse it somewhat so that, you know, you'll have a little bit on this county, a little bit on that county. So it'll spread an outbreak, for instance, at a given university out, even if most of the students are in state, it'll still spread it out in the counties and it won't be as dramatic. So, there definitely is an uptick in new cases. And just to give you an idea, yesterday the number was a little bit over 40,000, which is kind of where it's been during the week. It generally falls down a little bit on the weekend. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are just 4 days that generally have the highest numbers. And so today, which is typically on the higher side, there were over 50,000 cases. I've got 52,172 so far, and there's still another update that's going to come out of California. But just to give you an idea, I've been sending you the states that report over 1,000 cases today, you know, in a given day. But to give you a sense as to how widespread that is now, just for today, these are the following states that reported at least 1,000 new cases. So Pennsylvania, which has not been on the list for quite some time, had 2,000, and this might be both the University of Pittsburgh as well as Temple, it seems to have quite a bit in eastern Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area. And then I'll get to it, but there's, you know, Penn State seems to have some significant issues also. So that's three different schools in Pennsylvania. And that might be contributing to why there were 2,000 new cases in Pennsylvania. California's got 4,812. Michigan's got 1,053. Illinois, I didn't get a chance to track this down. They reported 5,594 cases today. So 5,000 cases would definitely be a record for
Henry. Is this against a background of decreased testing?
Correct. Now, everybody is in decreasing testing, but this is what I'm saying. Most of the schools are trying to get a handle on this, you know, as to whether they can really have in-class teaching or whether everything has to be virtual. And so the universities are definitely going to be testing. I assume that the high schools are also going to. So and probably elementary schools. So there may be some increased testing. I'm not sure how they're all handling this, you know, how proactive they're being. I think a lot of the colleges, because they've got, you know, the students are living on campus, so they not only are going to school, they're living in the dorms or they're living in housing nearby. And so there's a concern, obviously, that if they got big concentrations of the virus in a given dorm or a given fraternity or sorority or something, that if they don't pay attention and don't alert them and don't, you know, one way or another get testing done, then it can just explode. And they're trying to manage that. So there may be increased testing at newly entered schools. The overall, when I'm saying there's less testing, that's kind of looking at how things have been going over the last several weeks, and that might not include so much people, you know, students going back to school yet. And so the number may be going up, but the testing is down. And the state, this may not be a coincidence, this may be why, but some of the states that had a lot of cases, like California and Florida and Texas, their testing is down in all of those states. And so, and their numbers are actually going a little bit down. And they were closer to 10,000 cases a day. Now they're in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 5,000 cases a day. So their cases are down, but their testing is down. But those are some of the hard hit ones. I'm not positive what's going on at these others where they're seeing these dramatic increases. And so, you know, what they've got kind of dictates somewhat how much testing they're doing. And so some of these numbers may not be the numbers down there. It could be that the numbers were lower. They weren't testing that much. And now with these numbers going up, they're going to test more. So the numbers I'm giving you come straight from the state labs. So this is what they're reporting. And most of them do a daily report, although a few of them cut back on the weekends. Kansas is the only one that does like every other day, but pretty much everybody else, at least during the week, gives a daily update. So the numbers I'm reading off to you are today's numbers minus yesterday's numbers, total number of cases. So it's given the number of new cases reported today. And like I said, Illinois was unusually high. It was 5,594. Illinois has been creeping up, but it was creeping up in the 1,000 to 2,000 a day range. And now the 5,000 is unusually high. Okay, and then Florida's got 3,198. Texas has 5,482. Georgia's got 2,066. Maryland, Ohio has 1,332. Indiana has 1,030. Virginia has 1,111. Tennessee has 1,051. North Carolina has 2,045. Missouri has 1,570. Alabama has 1,108. Wisconsin has 1,498. South Carolina has 1,629. Iowa's got 1,083.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas has 1,280. Oklahoma has 1,013. Arkansas has 1,094. So, you know, it's somewhat similar to these earlier states I was reading off, and that most of the states in the South fall onto this list. But if you listen, there were other states in the North that some of which have been reported recently and some of which are new. Like I said, Pennsylvania hasn't had 1,000 cases for some time, and they had 2,000 cases today. So that's a lot of states, is the bottom line. There's a lot of states that have 1,000, and the ones I didn't read, most of the ones I didn't read have between 500 and 1,000. So it's not like, New York is up to 819 today. So I didn't read that one. So there's quite a few. I mean, Kentucky has 700. Minnesota's got 800. So to give you an idea, there's a lot of states with a lot of cases today. And I strongly suspect that some of this has to do with students returning to class and universities going and testing them and then reporting to the state. And like I said, I don't know if there's a big lag on that or that's just a day lag and that doesn't mean much. But some of these numbers may reflect, you know, schools opening up a couple of weeks ago, especially universities that have a tendency to start sometime in August. The ones in the South are usually the beginning of August, but the other ones still tend to start classes sometime in late August. And, at their big universities, they've got students coming on classes, on campus, so they're moving in before school starts. Mm-hmm. In all likelihood, that's when they get tested. They're going to get them tested, you know, when they're going into the dorms to figure out what they've got in the dorms, as opposed to, you know, waiting till school starts and have an outbreak spread while they're, you know, and getting mm-hmm. set up, et cetera. So these numbers, 50,000, it hasn't been up to 50,000 for many weeks now. So this is a big jump. If you recall, it had gotten even higher, might have been right after 4th of July weekend, or it might have actually been going all the way back to, Memorial Day weekend. But the holidays tend to jack the numbers up, and so these numbers are going up, and the holiday hasn't started yet. Holiday weekend is this week, so they're not going to see those results until probably a couple of weeks from now, because people right. have to get infected and then symptoms and then get tested and then report them to the state and then they show up. So, you know, there's a 2 or 3 week delay. So anything that's happening this weekend, you're not going to really see for a little while. And, and the deaths are up. The deaths are, you know, even though some of the treatments may be achieving some results, but today there were about 1,000, it's 980 I've got so far, but like I said, California is not done. So it'll probably get up to 1,000. Today it was 1,091 yesterday. So that's still there. And And then, as you mentioned, these projections, University of Washington had come out with a projection a couple of weeks ago that expects the number of dead in the U.S. to go up to a little over 300,000 by December 1st. And then, as you mentioned, they've got it up to like 410,000 by January 1st. So you can see how these numbers are shaking out here. Like I said, 400,000 dead is, this is getting, 1918 type numbers. 1918, I think it is 600,000. Of course, there weren't as many people in the U.S. in 1918 as there are today. But the 1918 numbers are not just for, the year 1918. They really are reflective of, that pandemic and the excess deaths went well into 1919. So even the 1918 pandemic probably didn't have 400,000 deaths, in the fall of 1918. They ended up with these higher numbers, going through 2 years worth of deaths. And, the projection of 400,000 in January is certainly not an indication that in February they'll still be at 400,000. They'll be higher in February. So this winter, it's very possible that the number of Americans that are dead is going to be getting close to the number for 1918, which covers 2 years, 1918 and 1919. And so it is in that ballpark. And these are just estimates. So, they can say 400,000, it can end up being 800,000. Factor two is not that big.
Exactly right. Sure.
An error when you're going out several months, and you really don't have a good sense as to what's going to happen going back to school. And there was another report that kind of goes along with what you had mentioned with finding problems with the heart muscle tissue in vitro. So that was essentially infecting those cells grown in tissue culture, and seeing what effect the virus has. And the effect they found was that the heart muscle was being destroyed. And another story came out a couple of days ago that came out of Penn State. And they said they looked at their students and they had a fair number they looked at their football students because they were in part trying to get an idea of what they were doing as far as the football season was concerned. So they were looking at it before they decided to delay the open of the Big Ten. And when they did that, they had a fair number of students that were positive, and the initial report said that between 30 and 35% of the positives had myocarditis. So they had some type of problem with their heart.
Well, they called it inflammation, which suggests an infection of the heart, a viral infection of the heart.
Right.
Not necessarily permanent, but it was there. Yeah.
Right. Well, they raised 2 points. Number one was that the myocarditis was not limited to the players with the worst symptoms and the worst infections. They were seeing myocarditis in athletes who were asymptomatic. And so they didn't really have any symptoms. They just did an MRI on their heart, and they saw that there was inflammation in the heart.
This is very unnerving to hear this. This is not comforting.
Right. And And this was particularly unnerving for the athletes, because these guys are going to college to play D1 ball, and some are hoping to play professionally. So they have to be kind of elite athletes. And they kind of mentioned that, you know, this type of injury, it could be permanent and could take, their ability to use oxygen and, you know, basically,
it can make them from a AAA athlete superstar to a AA. That's what they were saying.
Correct. So they could basically, you know, change the arc of their professional development and turn, you know, basically make them not be as elite as they were before they got infected. And so because of those, initial results, and they came out today and yesterday and said, well, they came out with a publication and the numbers weren't quite as high as the initial data was given to this, coach who had mentioned it in the news reports. But, it's still, even if it isn't 35%, even if it's 10 or 15%, you know, that's a worry because, these are results before the season started. You know, if they're playing football, it could be that either A, more will be infected, or B, some of these might get reinfected because there seems to be more and more evidence of, people that are infected a second time. There's some, discussion of others who they classify as long haulers basically right. get sick and, they stay sick for weeks, if not months. And they, you know, they may take, PCR tests and be positive, then go negative, and they test them again and they're positive again. And the same thing happens with the symptoms, where they start to feel better and they think they're done, and then all of a sudden they've got a cough again or they've got a fever again, and they test and they're positive again. And it kind of is indicating that the virus is lurking around, and they're really not getting cured that quickly. And they said that's what went into the decision of both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to not play football in the fall. And, you know, whether they're going to try to get something in the spring kind of depends upon, you know, what happens with the virus and how easy it is to do that. But that was their decision. And then the three other big conferences, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12, elected to go forward. And so I'm not sure how well that's going to work. I mentioned a few of these colleges that have some fairly high levels. I think one of them was reporting something like 28% of the tests were positive. And so, you know, that's the type of number which indicates your testing is way too low to know exactly what you have there. If you've got 28% of the samples being tested, then there's probably a lot more people that you should be testing. Contacts of these 28% that are positive. If the number's that high, then a lot of these cases have already infected other people, and they just haven't been tested yet. You don't know who they are, but those numbers are going to go up dramatically. If you got 28% positive, then the virus is kind of running unchecked and is expanding. And that's what I would predict is going to happen. It's not a surprise. I had said this several weeks ago that this is what's going to happen, and thought that the analogies would be very similar to what happened with the swine flu. That as soon as you open up the schools and you've got this much virus floating around, you're going to have multiple people infected on day one of school. And in reality, it'll be minus 5 days because they'll be infected when they show up to move into the dorm, before school has even started yet. And so these schools are going to be teeming with virus. And Anthony Fauci kind of is concerned that you're basically going to have these students from all over the country kind of converging on some of these larger campuses, and they're going to get infected. And then the decision is, well, we have too many positives here. You have to go home. They're just going to go ahead and spread that virus, to all of their hometown. And it's just going to be, from an infectious disease standpoint, a very difficult situation, because you're going to get a lot more people infected because they went to school, and then a lot of their contacts get infected at their hometowns because they went home. And, I don't expect Anthony Fauci's warning to be heeded, that essentially the schools will, they basically already made their contribution, by telling everybody to come back to school, and now they don't want to, just have all these positives that they have to manage and can't go to class anyway. So they'll say, why don't you go home? and that's what, that would be my expectation. That my expectation is not that they're going to all stay in their, dormitories and, infect others in the dormitories. They're going to just say, oh, if I can't go to class and I have to do it on the computer, I've got a computer. I can take the computer home and do it. I don't have to do it here on campus. And the ones that want to do it more than anybody would be the ones that aren't infected yet. I'll just figure that the campus is not a safe location. And so, I think that the attempt to get the schools open within class, and then at the high school and elementary school, you'll still have these mask optional kind of situations where you'll have X percentage of the kids aren't even wearing a mask, and they're have. The classrooms are way too crowded. There's been no real, significant effort to make these schools more, friendly to contain the virus. There's not going to be, new ventilation systems and, plans to do stuff with HEPA filters and do things that you could conceivably be doing to lessen the spread of the virus. And many of these cases, the closest they're going to do is to, have kids come on alternate days or something and have them do half virtual and half in class and reduce the concentration of students in class. But it's not going to, it's not going to be very successful. You're just going to have too many students in class and too many students having parties and trying to figure out a way they'll figure they're invincible and their friends are going to these parties and they might as well go to these parties and da 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 da. So the virus will end up spreading in these classrooms, and it might be more efficient than what happened with holiday weekends, where more people were traveling, but it was limited to the weekend. It was kind of like they would go wherever they were going to go, and then they'd go back home. Whereas the schools, they go to these unsafe areas, and that they stay there until they get infected, essentially, and then they realize that there's a problem. So that's an issue. And then, they're still concerned with your buddy Scott Atlas that this is the plan. That Trump's plan is essentially true. To get all these students infected because, but little myocarditis among friends. You know, so it's like, you know, he's saying, no, it's not going to be a problem. These guys don't die. And don't worry about it. And you'll have immunity. And the question of the immunity is still a big question as to how long lasting the immunity is, and whether you can get infected again a couple, you know, weeks or a couple of months later, even if you do get infected. And I think it'll be a lot like the swine flu. I've said it before that I think people were infected multiple times with the swine flu, and they had a milder version initially, and that didn't give enough protection. And so when they got exposed to higher concentrations of the virus, because that would be the version that would spread the most easily. So if you have somebody with a higher concentration, he's going to infect people with a higher viral load. They're going to end up getting more virus than they did, you know, the first time around, where they just got a little bit of virus, because the people had very mild symptoms and the virus was still kind of adapting and hadn't really been selected so much for these higher viral loads. And so it just builds upon itself. So you kind of get a milder wave, and a few weeks later or a month later, you end up getting a higher dose of the virus, and it overcomes the resistance right. You had initially. So my expectations are that these numbers are going to continue going up. And the numbers that are showing up today are really just the tip of the iceberg. The fact that there's already 50,000 cases, and not all the schools have opened up. And in general, it's not like everybody's going to get infected on the first day. Yeah, it's going to build. And then, the weather's going to start getting cooler, and, people are going to spend more time indoors, and, you're going to have the confusion, as you said, over flu. Flu season's going to start, and you're going to have symptoms, and you're not going to know what you've got, and then it's going to be harder.
It's
going to
ramp up the whole fear factor, the anxiety levels, everything going to go up.
Right. Well, people are going to read about this.
That's right.
Next week, they'll start reading that, well, you know, we had it down to 40,000 cases a day, and now it's up to 50,000, and now it's up to 60,000. And people that have a cough or have symptoms, they're going to want to get tested to know if they've got the flu or if they've got COVID. And then they're going to run into testing backlogs. So, you get tested, but you don't get the results in time. And then you don't know whether you should be quarantined or not, because, you don't know if you got the flu or if you got an upper respiratory infection or if you got COVID. And so I think that part of it is just going to be messy. And then, Trump is saying that, we're going to have a vaccine by, the health departments should be, working on their distribution plan. Who's going to get, the vaccine, and how you're going to distribute it. And there's some major issues with that. That is that, I mentioned this before, but the two leading candidates, the two leading trials, I should say, that have already started phase three. Number one, they require two doses. So, there's about a three to 4 weeks between the first dose and the second dose. So even if you started the trials today, or you started them, a couple of weeks ago, those people aren't going to be fully immunized until they get the second shot, and then they got to wait a couple of weeks for that to take effect. So they're not even going to be protected for another month or two. you know, even if they've already been enrolled, and a lot of the ones that are planning on being enrolled aren't enrolled yet. They haven't even got their first shot yet because they're planning on having about 30,000 people in each of these trials. So there's still enrollment issues. And then as far as the distribution, that could present additional logistics problems because these are vaccines that involve these viral vectors, and the vaccines have to be stored at like, you know, 90, you know, minus 80 degrees centigrade or so. So there's whether the facilities have, you know, the freezing capacity to do it at scale locally, that may end up being a logistic problem. It's a, you know, somewhat unusual that you have to have very large number of doses refrigerated at very low numbers.
Sure.
And then the third issue is that these are double-blind experiments. So that essentially the doctor doesn't know who gets the placebo and who gets the control. The patients don't know who gets what. And so until you break the code as to who got what, you have no idea whether the vaccine's working or not. So at this time, even if you're starting to get results, you don't really know anything until you break the code and figure out who got the vaccine and who got the placebo. And the test is not just that you got immunized and you got antibodies. The end point to show that you've actually got efficacy is that they're going to be looking at the two groups and comparing what frequency, end up getting infected. I mean, the expectation is that if the vaccine is working, those that got the vaccine will have a much lower frequency of infection than those that received the placebo. And they don't know what those numbers are because they haven't broken the code, and the vast majority of people that have been injected with the virus haven't been injected twice and had a couple week period after the second injection to have the vaccine take full effect. And so there's like zero data right now. So this number is thrown out, you know, November 1st, which is 2 days before the election, but there's no real data to say that's a realistic date for starting to distribute the vaccine.
That's just guesswork right now.
So it's all smoke and mirrors right now because they don't know whether any of them are working right now in the phase three. They know what kind of results they got in phase one, phase two. But even in that, the number of enrollees is on the low side, and they're going to concentrate on the ones that are going to give the best results. So they're going to be, you know, heavily weighted to younger adults that are relatively healthy, and some of the failures to protect, or some of those with complications are more likely to be the older population that has some of these underlying conditions, because those are the ones that are more susceptible and need the vaccine the most, but they're also the ones that are most likely to not get as good a result because their immune system is not what it used to be. Right. And they're more likely to have underlying conditions. So they're more likely to end up with potential complications that may not be evident in the,
right. All right, we got just a minute left, Henry. We got to wrap it up here. And so what do we look for over the weekend? More of the same, more college confusion, This athlete thing—that we've got to watch that closely. That's a very right. disconcerting story. I don't. That's bad. Not good.
Right, and especially because it was in those that were asymptomatic, and
that's right.
So asymptomatic are both those that can transmit the virus as well as those that might still have, you know, serious effects, and they may not die, but they, you know, there may be serious damage there. You take these younger people and you say, well, you know, they seem to be okay. They recovered, but, you know, they might have recovered until they, you know, have to do the 50-yard dash and they find out that their times aren't what they used to be, or they're really out of breath and they get fatigued a lot more easily, and they just can't perform at the level that they used to perform at. And so, yeah, these upcoming, like the weekend, there's a reasonable chance there'll be more information coming out with the schools. I don't know how many are supposed to start playing, you know, football, for instance. I know here in Western Pennsylvania, they pushed it out to, the last time I looked, it's not till next weekend. And I don't know if that's been pushed out since, but it should have started like a week or two ago, and it's not going to start until next week. But some of the schools undoubtedly will start. So there'll be some data on that. The numbers are always low over the weekend, so it's hard to say, you know, how reliable that information will be. But next week, I would not be surprised to see many days where there's 50,000 or more cases, and those numbers, I think, will go up. So.
Okay. All right, Henry. Thank you. Excellent.
Okay.
Coverage, as always. All right.
I'll have a good holiday weekend. And
you too.
We'll touch base.
We'll talk to you Monday night, Labor Day night. Don't forget.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll give an update and we'll get a good roll. Okay. Talk to you then.
All right. Good night, Henry. All right. Okay, there he goes. And thank you for being here tonight. And I hope all of you have a good time this weekend. And we've just, this whole issue of pounding the public down with fear and uncertainty and all that, we have to seize the higher ground here, not fall into those traps. I know most of you don't, but I just think of the average American watching TV news, thinking they're being informed. They're being informed all right, but not with reality in most cases. Talk to you Monday. In the meantime, you know where you can find us, so we'll see you there.